So maybe since there were a bunch of absentees,
go over what you did.
A little bit, yeah. Much more exciting. Okay, so the so what we discussed last time was, again, and I think it's nice in a certain sense that, again, we've been dealing with two yesodos the entire time, basically, right, of trying to internalize the emunah in the fact that Hashem, that we are a creation and He is the creator, and that that's a relationship that exists. And then the second point, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us at all times. So he tried to sort of, kick that up a notch in the parak that we did last time in discussing Hashgacha Pratis. And what he tried to explain was that basically what Hashgacha Pratis is believing, but more than just believing, really internalizing, that Hashem is not just present, but involved in everything that's going on in our lives. And to try and sort of reflect on that, and what in terms of applying it, what he pointed out was that it's very difficult to train ourselves in Hashgacha Pratis during the times when something big is going on. It's much easier to try to get ourselves used to it in the normal course of events. So again, the mashal that we gave was if let's say the kids are playing and suddenly a very, very expensive vase falls down. Okay, $1,000 vase is now shattered on the floor. So,
what's the first lesson?
Don't buy $1,000 vase.
Right.
I know her a little bit. Okay. The point that he was making, so many people initially are angry, but they're angry about the vase breaking. So he says, sometimes we can more easily, say that something is Hashgacha Pratis, but if it's a big loss or there's an earthquake and people were killed, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. But the fact that I should lose my vase, that doesn't ring a bell in terms of being Hashgacha Pratis. So he said you have to be able to sort of split your emotions. You should not be, the fact that you lost $1,000 is because Hashem wanted you to lose $1,000. The fact that your kids were the cause of it, so now you have a chinuch question. But again, and I mentioned this, I think I quoted you last time, when you're being mechanich, brilliant things. When you're being mechanich, when it comes to a chinuch lesson, you can't necessarily, if it wasn't an anticipated consequence, you can't take into account the fact that something bad happened. Meaning, if they just happened to be pushing and fighting,
you're saying if they were still doing the same pushing and shoving and nothing broke.
Right, you have to punish. You have to. In terms of them, you have to be mechanech them the same way you would if there's fighting in the house. Again, unless they knew that the vase was right there and they
warned them.
Right, but again, assuming that they were just horsing around the way that they normally would, and then somebody fell and hit and banged into the wall and then hit the table, and then the vase fell down.
Right.
So then you can't be angry at them any differently for the fact that the vase was broken than for the way that it was in terms of the actual conduct. And if you're can sort of be honest with yourself, and you realize that really what you're angry about is not the fact that they were fighting, but the fact that you lost $1,000 vase. But if we can appreciate the fact that that was part of the plan, because there's no way that even if somebody wanted to, they could cause me to lose $1,000 unless Hashem wanted it to happen. But it's hard in those moments to train ourselves to see the Hashgacha Pratis in it. So his suggestion was to try throughout the day on smaller things to pay attention to the Hashgacha Pratis. The fact that, we can drive safely from here to the store and nobody, crashed into us and nothing went wrong, that's also Hashgacha Pratis, that everything and the simple things goes right, or even when, I think I gave an example last time, if you got distracted by something and whatever you were cooking got burned, so that was what was supposed to happen. So again, you can figure out in the future how to try to avoid it, but ultimately you can't be angry about the fact that it was burnt. That's Hashgacha Pratis. So, again, you have to, you know, do your part, but it's easier when things are not very, very intense to try at those moments to work on the Hashgacha part. So if we take time throughout the normal course of events and try and see the hand of Hashem in them, and not in the, you know, it's very easy, or, you know, when you read the, you know, Rabbi Pesach Kron stories, or I got to hear Charlie Harari yesterday, so, you know, those types of stories, you know, they're powerful and they're overwhelming, and it gives you a little bit of chizik. But that doesn't help, at least for me, in terms of the day-to-day hashgacha pratis. That's, you know, when something unbelievable happens, you see it. But when the little things, you know, go wrong, and you're stuck in traffic, and instead of being frustrated to say, okay, for whatever reason, Hashem wants me not to be able to get there smoothly. I drove back from Connecticut last night late, and Waze put me on the Cross Bronx. I still don't know why. I had to park my car at 11.
He called me and said, I'm putting it into park.
It was after 11 o'clock at night. Okay. So
and you got back. Right.
Right, but so again, there's so it's sort of trying in the when things are not as intensely frustrating and the emotions are there, those are the times to try and work on Hashgacha Pratis and to see that and look that Hashem is with me, He's guided, and this is what He wants should happen. Why? We don't know why. We can try and if we feel better about it, we could try to make up whys, but usually we don't know what the why is. But ultimately, it's about a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The flip side, though, which is the last point, I think, before we move on, is that just because if we're working on this, and then we still find ourselves getting upset at times, it doesn't mean we're a failure. It means that we're human.
Still working on it.
Right. It doesn't mean, you know, these are nothing that we've talked about over the course of this entire year have been things that are all or nothing. These are things that just take work and effort. And if you see that it doesn't work, then the key is to sort and you see, you know, you whatever went wrong, and maybe it wasn't even the biggest deal, and it got you upset. The key is to when, you know, a minute or two passes and you realize, well, I'm not sure why I got so upset. If you can be honest with yourself afterwards, then you can sort of get yourself back on track. But to find times and to find ways and to talk about it and to make it into a conversation that, you know, so many things that happen in our lives are our hashgacha pratis. You know the Charlie Harari story?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend who was here recently, and he came for Shabbos, and he said that he lives in California, and he said that, if you know him a little bit, but you'll still appreciate it, I think. And he said that he was having a little bit of a rough day, and he went to Coffee Bean, that's what you do if you're in LA.
LA.
And he's waiting there online, and Charlie Harari comes in. And they knew each other a little bit, and he says hello, and he said, you know, how you doing? He's like, whatever, having a little bit of whatever the rough day was. Like, oh, no. So he gives him a little bit of a pep talk, and then he goes, I got to tell you something. So Charlie Harari tells him, I wasn't supposed to be in this Coffee Bean. I went to a Starbucks over there, and I went to this place, and there was nothing to go. Now I know why Hashem sent me to this Coffee Bean.
And
my friend turns to me and he goes,
oh my God, now I'm a Charlie Harari story.
But there's a certain godless in the fact that he can even look at the world that way. He was talking, I was at this, the RCA convention yesterday, and that's why I was in Connecticut, and he spoke there. And he was talking about speaking and stories and how you have to have a story in every speech. So I said, I didn't say it in these words. I said, you know, you speak in a different place every week. You can use the same stories and the same speeches. I said, we're getting up in shul, and every Shabbos, you know, I said, where do you get all these stories from? So he said, he gave one or two, okay, good question, whatever. He says, he doesn't read any of the books. He doesn't read any of the Rabbi Kuhn books. He doesn't read any of those things. He said, if you're just looking for them, stories are everywhere. I think his language was, the reason that children were created was to give you stories. So
no, I agree that if you're looking, you always find stories.
So I guess you have to have the right eye in order to be able to look. But I think in terms of our point, is that if we look for the hashgacha pratis in things, and if we make it a conversation in the house, and it's something that we talk about with our families, then that's another way of, you know, sort of bringing Hashem in a very real way into the picture. Yes.
Okay, so I'm I always like to find these things in my life, like these in very small, they seem minute kind of things. My husband, on the other hand, I don't know if he doesn't. I think he just has a different philosophy. And there are other.
In Hashgacha Pratis? Yes. So I went through that. There are different Rishitos in the Rishonim.
That's true. I was explaining to him a story, for example. I'll just give you a short one. There was a bee in our house on Shabbos, and my kids were freaking out, of course. And it looked like it was dying. It was like by the window, like this enclosed kind of window. Like it's pushed out, so it just seemed like it was like in a little place. It was happy, it wasn't bothering anyone. And I was like, I'm not going to go kill it on Shabbos if it's not bothering anybody. So my kids were freaking out. They left the house, where I left it alone. And it just like sat on the windowsill, just didn't move. And then a whole week passed. Like it just, I never thought of it again. I didn't see it for a whole week. And then literally Erev Shabbos, right before the next Shabbos, the same exact spot, a bee. And I felt like Hashem was saying, you weren't Michal Shabbos, you did the right thing, here's the bee, kill it before Shabbos done. And I told my husband the story, and I'm like, am I looking too much? Am I making big things that I'm not, like, because he has such a different philosophy.
He's a man.
And he's,
woman.
And he's yeah. like.
So I think somewhat, like, I think.
I special than nothing.
Again, we've been talking throughout that women are more spiritual than men. He mentioned that at the very, very beginning. And that's, again, as a rule, that's 100% true. Again, not that it's 100% true 100% of the time, but that is a safe rule. And that's normally the case, again, with there being definitely being exceptions. Now, there are different opinions in the Mefarshim as to what Hashgacha Pratis is. So I mentioned last time, some hold that only Jews have Hashgacha Pratis, and non-Jews don't have Hashgacha Pratis at all. Some believe that animals, you know, whether a bear eats a deer, I don't know if that even happens, but if assuming a bear eats a deer, was that orchestrated by Hashem? So there are Rishonim that say, no, that's not, he doesn't care. Meaning he put a natural order. Now, if person is there and the bear doesn't eat the person because the bear ate the deer, so then we can see that maybe in that particular instance, Hashem decided the bear should, again, none of these, this, according to all of the Mefarshim, is true. None of, anybody who says that Hashgacha Pratis does not apply in certain situations never means that Hashem cannot intervene in those cases. It just means that the norm is that he lets nature run its course for, let's say, again, even let's say leaves falling off of the tree. It's a machlokas, whether does Hashem orchestrate every leaf and every blade of grass growing where it grows and things like that, or no, he lets the world function in a natural way if it doesn't impact anybody. And even those that say that there's Hashgacha Pratis for Jews and not for non-Jews, if a non-Jew is interacting or will affect the Jews, then there is going to be Hashgacha Pratis because then it's affecting the Jews. There are definitely different opinions. In that particular case, again, you gave a reason. The reason is not really part of Hashgacha Pratis.
It was my own interpretation to make me feel good.
So that's fine. You can. You're welcome to do that. That doesn't fit directly into any of these categories. That's taking it to another level. And if that makes you happy, that's great. The fact that Hashem orchestrates that the bee should be there, assuming that it's something which bothers.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Thursday, Friday.
I have no idea why. Maybe it was a Gilgal of somebody who once killed a bee on Shabbos. I have no idea. I don't know what the reason is.
Right.
But, again, even according to the ones that limit Hashgacha Pratis in the normal sense, they may say that if the bee is something which disrupts the Shabbos, then presumably Hashem decided that it should be there.
Uh-huh.
But again, you giving an interpretation to it is your right.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason that anybody else has to sign on to that.
So Hashgacha Pratis is not giving a reason for it. It's
right.
That's what Charlie Harari did. He said, oh, now I know the reason why I had to come here.
Correct.
Right.
If that makes you feel, again, because then he feels like he saw.
Without the purpose. I'm sorry, I forgot something.
No, but that's not exactly the same thing.
What we know we're supposed to be doing is always experience Hashem in our lives.
Right? Correct.
We're supposed to be seeing Hashem in our lives and really feeling it. So when we have experience that happen, mm-hmm. we're supposed to see the experience and try to figure not everything. You just have, and you
we have to believe that everything is from Hashem.
Hands in our lives, that's the next step from taking it from the intellect.
It could be, but again, even in the Charlie Harari case, I feel bad that he became my marshal, but he's not listening to my shiur, so I'm not worried. After you asked that question, you started using me. I needed to use a story because that's what he said. So even in that case, it's hashgacha pratis, and you can believe that it's hashgacha pratis, even if he showed up and didn't make it to the other three stores because of whatever the reason was, even if he didn't meet this person. He felt like he had the reason in that case. If somebody wanted to disagree and say that, okay, that's nice that you think that's the reason, maybe the reason was because in the other one, they were going to serve you treif. It could be any reason you want. If you feel if you feel comfortable doing that, gesunte, hey, do it.
Right.
And if you get chizik out of doing that, that's beautiful.
The same thing as in traffic. A lot of times you have no, you can't
100%
in traffic, but you say, oh, maybe.
But again, the point is that the all of those things should be elevating us to the point that we feel it even when we can't interpret it. Now, if the interpretation helps you to believe more strongly that it's Hashem that's orchestrating it, great. But even if somebody doesn't believe that, says, yeah, Hashem sent the bee to the house, I don't know, and I don't necessarily care why. As long as I believe that it's coming and that Hashem is the one who's orchestrating things, that's sufficient. That's the point. It's not wrong. If that makes you, and that gives you the chizik to keep working on hashgacha pratis.
I don't want to be a fool. I don't want to be a person who's just like making up stories in order to make myself feel better.
So I don't think that's true. I don't think you have to assume.
This is what I'm thinking. Like, I have to be honest, though.
Right.
I don't feel like a fool. I don't feel like a fool. But I'm saying, like, I don't want to attribute things that are not true.
So there's no way to know that. You're never going
to
know that.
You'll never know.
You're never going to know that. So if it's rational and logical...
It's somewhat rational. I think it's fine.
I think your explanation... Again, I don't know that I would have come up with it. I'm being honest. Right. But I think your explanation is better than, you know, my Gilgal one that I just threw out. If I had to pick one. But if that gives you the chizuk to keep working on this
midah,
then that's great. Right. Nothing wrong with it. And again, the more sensitized we are to seeing Hashem in our lives, then we will probably be able to interpret things in a way that we're comfortable with on a rational level. Because there was nothing irrational about what you said.
Right. I don't feel like it was. It's just that my husband and I are very...
That's fine.
Like a scientific,
right? And he might be very comfortable saying, "I believe that it was Hashem,"
yes.
But I have no idea why, and it's not my job to know why. The why of Hashem is not something that you have to understand. If it gives you strength, again, whys can be dangerous also, because you can ask whys on things that you really don't know the answer to, and come to question things. So the why is a double-edged sword. So if you know yourself and you can use it comfortably in a way that supports what you're trying to do, beautiful, beautiful. I mean, you'll go to three stores for something and meet somebody in the third store, and who needed to talk about something, and you know, that's why you had to go to three stores. They didn't have the things, right? Something like that. It sounds like something that would happen.
Nice way of looking at it.
Right. Right. Exactly. So again, so when you see those things, but again. I'm not saying it's a higher level. It's a different level that even when that doesn't happen, there's still be, okay, this is what Hashem wanted. I'm not going to have that frustration that, why did I have to go to, you know, four different stores to buy all the things that I need for Shabbos? Even if I didn't see in the end. If you do see it in the end, and that, you know, gives you the strength that to remind you that Hashem is involved, that's great. That's great. But again, it's not a contradiction if somebody else doesn't see that. Again, for somebody else to believe, again, B is maybe different because it might get into that bigger discussion of, you know, whether there is hashgacha pratis on that. Again, assuming that it affected the Jews in the house, then presumably most would say there is hashgacha pratis on that. But it's but certainly in, you know, interactions or somebody frustrated me or somebody insulted me or things like that. So again, I might not see the reason right now, but if I did get insulted by somebody, Hashem wanted that to happen. A person can't harm me. A person can't harm me unless that's the will of Hashem. And to be able to sort of separate that and to not just be angry at the person, but to realize, okay, this is what was supposed to be, is a different way of looking at the world. Okay, so that was the Hashgacha Pratis that we talked about last time. In the next parak, he turns to also very practical and discusses tefillah, which I think he's going to talk about for a while, but again, I think of all the things, I think this might even be the most important, right? In terms of applying everything that we've been trying to learn, I think tefillah is the you know, an area where it can beautifully apply.
Okay.
Take it away.
All right. Va'ani tefillah. Ulevai sheyispala adam ko hayom kulo. Okay. B'sofa parakokadem, he's what we did last time. Hebmanu asem kudai yisodit b'hagdaras tzuras avoda.
So I actually didn't summarize that point.
Right.
I apologize.
Okay.
The last point that he made, which he's just saying over here, is that when we're talking to Hashem, and in this, again, this sort of dialogue, it doesn't have to be out loud, you know, unless you put your Bluetooth thing in so that people don't think you're weird, nor if you do it in the confines of when nobody else is around, this conversation that we have with Hashem, that you are involved in my life. So he was just, his last point that he made, which is going to be very important to, as the basis for this, is that it should be you. We should talk to Hashem as present, as opposed
now,
to Hashem who's distant, what we call, you know, second person versus third person. The fact that we relate, again, within Brachos we do, which is interesting, I think we'll talk about it later, we do both, right? It's Baruch Atah, you, Hashem, from the third person. So again, because we have a unique relationship with Hashem. But he's saying the fact that we can address Hashem as you, by definition, is now saying that
he's
present.
He's
with
us. Right. Okay. Shehadam edaber im ribono shalom, that we're talking to Hashem, but oseh zos b'lashon nochach, that we're talking to him in second person, v'lo b'lashon nistar. That's third person?
Yeah, hidden.
Okay. And not in third person. Zo hi achas menukudos hayesodios bioser. This is very crucial. Shadam chai im haribono shalom, that a person is actually living with Hashem. Velo asuk ribono shalom chas b'shalom b'nefredes. And he's not busy with Hashem as a separate entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Atan asuk bezer Hashem isbarach b'inyan ha-tefillah. So now we're getting to talk about tefillah. Tefillah b'muvan ha-miti shala. Hi kemo she-David ha-melech he-ira atzmo. This is how David testified about himself. Ani tefillah. He describes himself as that his being is tefillah. Kol etzem ha-vaya shalo, his whole existence, kol tzuras ha-chayim me-risha ad-gmira, from beginning to end, everything about him, kol yunikas ha-chiyush shalo ha-isa b'tzuras ha-tefillah. Everything about David was associated with tefillah. Kulmar, me-ever le-gima ha-tefillah she-tignu chazal es-bel kol-yom, beyond the three, what he's saying is that, you know, okay, so we have the three tefillahs that Chazal said we have to daven every day. But beyond that, hamahalachu ulavai sheyispala adam ko hayom kulo, that the Gemara in Brachos says a person should, you know, it should his whole day be davening. So, does that mashal fit or not really?
No.
The red one?
It's similar. You can mention.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember a class on tefillah that I gave a number of years ago. I don't remember, maybe it was last year. I don't remember. But
welcome to the club.
Yeah. But there was always a great story that I think of. It was I'll just say quickly, it was this man who, I'm sure it's a made up story, but this man who was selling bread at the entrance of town, and he spent his day, he baked the bread, he was a baker, and he sold his bread at the entrance where people came into the town. So then some very wealthy guy comes in, he sees him, and he recognizes him from his former yeshiva days, and he says, like, what are you doing here selling bread? You're brilliant, you're such a Talmud Chacham, why are you selling bread? I'll pay you, you go sit, you go learn, you know, go to yeshiva, and I'll pay you the difference what you'd be making with your bread. So he said, okay. So he went to go learn yeshiva, and then a couple months later, guy comes back to the edges of town. He sees the guy, like, who wants to buy the bread? Here, I have the bread. And he said, what's going on? I sent you money that you were going to be in yeshiva. And he said, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. You know, I have to return all the money. I went to yeshiva and I was learning in yeshiva. He said, but I was missing something. He said, when I baked the bread, I woke up in the morning and I said, like, Hashem, please, you know, let me get the right ingredients from the let me grind the wheat. And then he brought it. He said, Hashem, please help my bread rise well. Please help it bake well. Don't let it get burnt. Please help it taste good. Please let there be a nice day that customers come and want to buy the bread. He said, my whole entire day I was davening, and now I'm not involved with that anymore. So I have to come back. I have to bake bread. I just my wife and I want to spend our whole day, you know, talking to Hashem. He said, I used to just talk to Hashem all day. So that's what it reminds me of. But, okay, so ma kavanas hadvarim. Le'el dibarnu. That Hashem is right here with us next to everyone. Right? Another form of seeing Hashem with you all the time in Hashkacha Pratis. But we didn't come to speak in depth about tefillah. That we spoke about, that we have to recognize that Hashem is always next to us. And to recognize the Hashkacha of Hashem, of a Hatsura Hamitisha Advarim,
the essence of what we're trying to say.
Every challenge in Avoda, L'chol Kinyan, every time we want to grow higher, grow spiritually, it's everything goes hand in hand with tefillah.
I mean, anything that we want to, he's going to elaborate on this more, but anything time that we want to try to accomplish something,
gain spiritually, it has this very strong connection with tefillah, and he will explain.
Skip the next paragraph.
Okay.
Vikan.
Adam omeid the omer liribon shalom. A person stands and says to Hashem, "B'seichel ani odeh shatam anheges habira." I know in my intellectually, I know that you are right. You run that Hashem runs the world. Shatam eziges yadi, that you move my hand. Ach. I intellectually understand that Hashem runs the world and does, you know, is involved with every aspect, but in the depths of my heart, I really believe that I'm the one who's responsible for my success. I'm the one who's responsible for, you know, eventually what needs to get done.
Right.
It's a struggle, you know. Like
right, that every one of us has. You know, we say and we want to believe that Hashem is running the world, but we're not always, you know, acting that way. And if we were honest with ourselves in terms of what we're feeling, we don't necessarily feel that he is running the world. We feel like we are the ones who are going to determine what happens. And it's usually only when, you know, as they say, you know, every people start davening, when the doctors
when
come out,
and
the doctor comes out and says, "Oh, now it's in God's hand.
Right.
It was in His hands the whole time."
Right.
But you know, they only tell you that when it's too late to daven, which whatever is a broader discussion. If there's such a time.
I was talking to Dina yesterday. Actually, no, like I always think of this pasuk, like "Tachas Asher Lo Avadta Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha V'Tiv Leva Mirov Kol." Like when you have everything,
it's much harder.
It's so much harder to serve Hashem. It's only when it's like, "Oh, okay, now we really need you."
Right.
But sorry. What?
I feel like a little embarrassed to contribute because I haven't been here for the others.
Nah.
No, it's fine.
We like all contributions.
Yeah, we're open here.
I hear everybody kind of sharing, like, challenges and then looking at the challenges and saying, I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's yad in the challenges. But what I haven't heard yet was when you see those little gifts that happen to you, you know, you make a green light that's just in time.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Open...
Right, so that was
safer to
correct.
The right page.
Yes.
And those are like those little Hashkacha Pratis kisses from Hashem.
100%.
That was a
part of what we focused on last time. Was okay. It's fine. A lot of people weren't here last time because there was no email sent, or I don't know, because Michal wasn't going to be here. Maybe people that. What? Okay, fine. So I should be insulted. No, okay. I'm joking. The more Torah, the better. Nobody has to come. As long as people are learning. That's 100% true. In terms of the Hashkacha Pratis, in terms of finding it at times when things are a little calmer, so yeah, 100%, you know, making the exit or getting to the places safely, all those things are absolutely perfect moments that we can try.
Like
it's just hard.
I really
100%.
Did, yeah.
that sense of understanding Hashgacha practice in the little small
100%. Place, it's those.
It's almost contributes to this sense of Hakar Satov for the Hashgacha
practice. 1,000%. And it's actually, it's those things.
No, it's those things that build you up
exactly.
to be able to
become.
Those are going to be more effective.
Right.
Exactly. Those are more effective. You're 100%, 100% on target. The challenge that he's talking about right now is really something that we all struggle with. I mean, I think. Or maybe people have a... Everybody struggles with it at some point, meaning maybe people have moved along on the road of that struggle. But the struggle between intellectually knowing that Hashem runs the world and then living our lives / feeling that we're running the world is it's a little bit of a contradiction that we all struggle with.
Isn't it similar to the concept of free will?
It is. Again, it's a bigger discussion how Bechira and how free will interacts with this. The simplest way of understanding it is that we can choose, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's happening. But even within the choices, we don't choose if things are going to succeed or not. Meaning,
right,
I can
choose what we're going to do, but we don't choose
if it's going to succeed or not. Right. I could choose that I'm going to go out and I'm going to open up a business. And I have to do the hishtadlus and all the right things to make the business go. Ultimately, if it's going to be successful, it's only if Hashem
right.
blesses those efforts. But usually, for many people, it's the opposite. When it doesn't go well, it's his fault. When it goes well, again, our successes, we tend to believe our own accomplishments. So what his point right here, which is again, it's a subtle point, but he's trying to get at something much larger, is that
we so should I just continue that?
Oh, you didn't finish
that
yet?
Paragraph?
Okay. Yes.
And I think your point is that today, compared to generations in the past, today things are just, life is so much easier. So everything just comes like easy. So we're always expecting it, and we're expecting it to be easy. Where
right.
I think, like a generation in our grandparents' time, like the baker, you're always davening that everything's going to work out because you see how it wasn't easy. Life was hard,
right.
and you were just
right.
so much.
That's how the Bali Musar explained the punishment of the Nachash. Right, the Nachash says, and you're going to eat afar. So what's the punishment? The Nachash always, the snake always has food.
Right.
It's crawling on the ground, and that's the food. So the punishment was right. Is that you don't have any connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the parent
who
Rahman al Islam sends
right.
the kid out and says, take the money, take whatever you want, don't contact me.
I'll give you an unlimited budget. But
we need the contact. We want to be able to connect. So the punishment was exactly that the Nachash was basically Hashem threw him away and said, you'll be okay on your own. I don't want a relationship with you. You're not welcome. And we have the exact opposite. So just finish up the paragraph because
right.
that's the last
right.
point that's,
it's
that he went, he was
okay.
getting at.
Intellectually, I know. Okay. Ani mevakesh mimcha, second to last line of the paragraph. Ani mevakesh mimcha, what I'm asking, what I'm davening from Hashem, from Ribono Sholem, shehayitia sheyodeya. The idea that I understand intellectually that Hashem runs the world, so that what I'm davening for is that I should have a fusion
of sorts.
That's such a good word, a fusion of what I'm feeling in my leave, and I mean of what intellectually and what inside what I'm feeling.
Right. Well, he's going to talk about this at length. We'll have to probably talk about this more next time.
Right.
But his point is that I think we don't always think about tefillah in the realm of
davening for ruchnias.
Right.
Davening to grow.
I want to have more emuna. So instead of you have to do your work on that, but combined with that is saying, Hashem, please help me internalize that value. And here also, if I know that I have this struggle, if I'm honest with myself and I realize I have this struggle, that I know intellectually everything is controlled by Hashem, but I'm not feeling it in the depths of my heart. So one of the things to do, and he's saying that this is fundamental, and again, and it stems from the more that I view Hashem as together with me in everything that I'm doing, so then I just turn to Hashem, and it doesn't have to be in the context of a shachris or a mincha or an official tefillah. It could just be when I have this time alone, and say, Hashem, just please help me. I really want. I had a Rebbe who used to say,
to wish.
He used to say, he goes, yeah, you really believe in Hashem? He goes, yeah, maybe you believe in Hashem. But at least you should wish to want to believe in Hashem. You're getting, those are levels also. It's distant, but you turn to Hashem and you say, like, I want this. I recognize that I really don't. I believe it maybe on an intellectual level, but everything that he was talking about at the beginning, am I living my life consistent with that? Not necessarily. So I turn to Hashem and I just say, please help me. If I'm going to make spiritual gains, there's no reason I should only turn to Hashem when somebody needs a refuah, parnasa, or something of those nature. It's the small things. And again, he's going to talk about this at length. I have to run, so I think maybe we'll pick up with this next time.
Do you physically have to speak, or can you think?
I think he believes that it's more effective to speak. That since the neshama, again, that's what we spoke about at the beginning, that there's this connection of neshama and guf, which specifically takes place because speech was what was uniquely put in man, that speech is more effective. I think if you, Hashem knows our thoughts also.
Right.
But we,
no,
it's,
I think,
generally
it's the same thing, like, let's say, that's a lot, but like with Shmona Esrei, like, you have to say it. You
right.
can't
it's
just
more,
like,
I think it's more,
it.
I think it's, I think it's more effective and it's more real if we say it. And again, articulating, and again, he's going to talk about this at length. I really think, in terms of building up to what we've done so far, I think it's maybe the most important part, so far. But he's going to talk about how tefillah plays a role in such a different way than we normally assume. And that, you know, we assume that it's limited to, you know, what it says in Shmona Esrei and during Shmona Esrei. And a much more real type of tefillah, for better or worse, for where we are, is, you know, sometimes the 30-second tefillah that, you know, we say tefillah saderach maybe when we're going on a big trip. But there's no reason you can't say, you know, Hashem, I really need to get there. You know, please help that there won't be traffic. You know, you can rely on Waze all you want, but sometimes Waze will put you on the cross of Bronx at 11 o'clock at night in a parking lot. And maybe it would have been more effective to David before I left Connecticut.
No, I learned that from that lesson from a mikvah lady. From a mikvah lady once in the country. It was like on a Thursday night or Saturday night. I forgot which one. The mikvah's crazy. There are like thousands of women from everywhere because all their husbands came up. And I said to her, do you mind if I take a minute to daven? And she said, one of the most powerful tefillahs was 5 words long. And I don't know why. Like, I'm not a Tanakh bucky. But all of a sudden I realized, like, oh, she was talking about Moshe. When he's out for Miriam, like Kel Narafana left, I was like, okay, I'll be really quick. But then walking out, I thought, I'm like, wow, that was great muster. Like, it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be a minute. Like, okay, you know, 1, 2, 3. Okay, I'm done. but I heard that she, you know, was like quick years ago, this like older Hasidic lady, and it stuck with me for forever. Mm-hmm. So like, just a really quick, you know, like, Hashem, I need help. Hashem,
just help with the things that we're doing anyway throughout their day. But if we realize that it's Hashem who's helping, then, but again, and the other chiddush that he's saying is that it's in the spiritual also. Sometimes we only daven for things that are physical, but we don't necessarily daven that we should have, that we should, you can even daven, that you should daven better.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anything that we yearn for, and anything that we want, ultimately the success is going to come from above. Thank you all. Have a great day.